This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast, May the 2nd. It's May Day in the UK. And for us here on the Top Order Podcast, we are back to what we love best. This week in cricket, where we're going to talk IPL, Australia squads to Sri Lanka are announced with pretty much everyone who's eligible to play for Australia in one of those four squads. We'll talk about England cricket turmoil and a whole host more. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Well, boys, we talked a little bit of IPL on last week's pod. Baldy just pointed out off microphone that pretty much everyone we gave big ups to had a poor week and everyone we said was shit had a good week. So, look, nothing unusual in that. Where do we want to start? Kohli's back in form. We've got some MS Dhoni genius. We've got Devon Conway, obviously the difference between winning and losing for the CSK as well. But where do we want to start?
We'll get to Stuart's smug face in a minute. That's just the incredible smugness of Devon Conway dominating the IPL once again now that the honeymoon's over. Look, the Top Order Podcast reversed butterfly effect continues. Rajasthan Royals got credit last week, lost. Sunrisers Hyderabad got credit last week. They've lost two in the bounce. And then we bagged CSK and Mumbai for being terrible, and they've both won games. It continues. The only real continuing trend, I guess, is that KKR have lost three in a row, which, of course, now that I've mentioned that, means that they'll bounce back with an... In fact, they've actually lost five in a row. So that means they'll bounce back with another win. So look for KKR to bounce back and win. And despite three losses on the row, Kohli making some runs, Stu. Is he back?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's nice to see him get some runs, but I don't know if it was a very meaningful innings. He kind of played that sort of innings where you're getting yourself back into form and you're getting a start, and then you've actually, when you play those kind of innings, we might talk about it when we talk about that CSK game actually, that when you get that start, you've got to go on and you've got to turn the run a ball that you've got going, runnable 40 into like an 80 off 60 balls or something like that, which, yeah, unfortunately he kind of got out at the wrong time. And yeah, is he back? I don't know. It wasn't, yeah, like I say, I don't think it was an especially impactful innings and they lost the game.
Yeah, it was too slow. It was too slow. The other batsman we talked about last week, Josh Butler and
KL Rahul,
they was going hundreds and almost, you know, that many balls or five extra balls. So it was too slow, but it was good to see him actually score some runs. Unfortunately, it came at the detriment of their team. I think it's good to see him scoring runs, but unfortunately, too slow for me.
Yeah, look, and their slide continues. You know, that's what I think, three in a row for them. There, it feels like there's. the top four is for the taking. You know, there are spots available. You just mentioned Rajasthan falling over there, Sunrisers as well, you know, losing a couple in a row. They've opened the door, but it does, I don't know that anyone's prepared to kind of step through it at the moment. The top two teams, you know, these two new franchises, they've just been unreal.
Let's just take a step back, I guess, let's go back to the auction. We talked about this. I think we gave a little bit of credit to some of the business that both of those teams did in that auction. Was it actually beneficial to be the expansion teams in this, you know, bigger draft, do we think, in terms of you've got to go out and obviously get your whole team? You didn't have the ability to retain anybody because you didn't have anyone to retain. And the teams that did have that decision to make, you know, which of our core players do we keep together? You know, did the KKR miss a trick in not keeping their skipper, Owen Morgan? You know, did Mumbai Indians miss a trick in not keeping some of their core? You know, they went with Pollard, obviously, and you know, a couple of others that may or may not now be in their thinking if they had that chance again. Was this a real benefit for those two teams? I guess it was designed to an extent to give them that leg up, but who would have predicted this?
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting way to think about it, but the only thing I can say really is that I think that as those new franchises, they were able to go out and kind of handpick the players that they wanted to. I know they weren't retained, but they were the players that they wanted to kind of start their franchise with. And there was no sort of emotional baggage that comes almost from the owners in terms of, like, we love this player, you're not going to let go of them. And I mean, you know, as much as I love the Kiwis, I think that Kane Williamson wouldn't have got that price if you're thinking about the Sunrisers. I don't think he would have reached that price if they hadn't retained him in the auction. So they obviously wanted him. They thought he was really important to the culture of the franchise. I still kind of stand by that. I think that he was a valuable player for them to keep. But in that sense, I do think some of those things kind of play into it. But, you know, I think all these teams had an opportunity to go out and do a good job at that auction, completely revamp their squad. I think the Mumbai is probably the one example where they really got hurt by it because they had built such an amazing core before. But every other franchise, I look at them and they could have done what Rajasthan did and built a really balanced roster. They could have done what these other two sides have done. And I just don't think they did a very good job at it. They kind of all left themselves holes, whether they were thinking we want to, you know, really target certain big money players, and that's let them down, I think.
With Gujarat and LSG, they didn't have the weight of expectation on them either. You know, not like those bigger names like the RCBs or the Mumbais or the CSKs who have struggled. They had nothing. They had no expectation on them whatsoever in a competition that had been a little bit diluted with more players in rosters and teams around the league.
I think the thing that has really impressed me about the two expansion franchises is the players that have come in as the figureheads of those franchises. So KL Rahul for the Lucknow Supergiants and Hardik Pandya in particular for Gujarat have taken their teams and they've carried them on their backs. They have been standout performers and everyone else has kind of lifted up behind them. The teams that have struggled this year, their senior players haven't shown the way for those other players to come up behind them. So I'm thinking about Ihsan Kishan. I'm thinking about Ravi Jadeja, who we're going to get to very soon in terms of the CSK leadership. Those players that are left behind in those franchises haven't stepped up and been real super-duper stars for their teams, whereas these two expansion franchises, they're kind of key marquee players, have been excellent so far this season.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. That these teams have got players that are playing very consistently. People are scoring runs very consistently and taking wickets consistently. The other teams, it's all kind of scattergun. They get one good performance from someone, and it's just not all happening. So look, all of the teams, they have the potential to do that, but yeah, it's hard to see, you know, a side like Gujarat. I think Raj, you just mentioned before, they're the best start to a competition ever.
They are 8 from 9. It's the first ever time that's been recorded in the IPL. So a good start for them.
Yeah, look, it's hard to see them falling out. And same with Lucknow and, you know, our Rajasthan as well. I think those three sides to me look very, very strong. And yeah, it's hard to see any other sides getting into that top four apart from that one spot, which maybe Sunrisers can hang on to.
Baldy, you mentioned Ravi Jadeja. Change of captaincy, change of look for the CSK. Do we want to have a little chat about changes at the top there with MS Dhoni coming in to captain the side and interestingly batted three as well, so bumped himself up the order in their recent win against the Sunrisers.
Look, this is a really interesting situation, isn't it? MS Dhoni back in the captaincy of CSK again, not because he wanted it, I think, but because Ravindra Jadeja has said that it was affecting his cricket and he has taken the decision to step down. Interesting comments made by MS Dhoni, Raj, as you said earlier off air, maybe taken slightly out of context in translation, but as I read it, Dhoni said, I've overseen his work for a couple of games, so I've given him some guidance, and effectively Dhoni allegedly has said to Jadeja, you need to make your own decisions and stand on your own feet as a skipper. And I think that's taken its toll on Jadeja's overall cricket. So MS Dhoni has now taken back the captaincy of CSK and they've recorded a first up win. And it looks like that might be the impetus to change their fortune for the rest of the season. But it could be too little too late come the playoffs.
Do you think that's all to do with leadership, or this is just a coincidence that they've turned their fortunes around so sharply?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence. We've got Devon Conway back from honeymoon, and
it's all Conway, is it?
And well, I don't know. Do you, how many games? You know, he did play a game with a where it didn't go so well for him early on in the season. But look, I think that potentially, you know, we're obviously going to see in the next week or so if it is actually a leadership thing. But you know, you go into a game and your openers score 180 for none or whatever it was. And that's
pretty good platform.
That's going to kind of help you win. And I think, like just said, that all of these teams have the potential to go out and do that. I mean, some of the ball striking from Gaikwad in particular, oh, unbelievable. Some of those sixes down the ground. And all the teams have the potential to do that. And it was their day today. Maybe, you know, maybe that kind of weight off Jadeja, and you know, you guys have all been in dressing rooms where, you know, things are, it's a negative sort of cycle, and you know, having that positivity, maybe Dhoni was able to uplift them. Who knows?
It was great batting that opening partnership. They didn't panic. I think they were 40 after the first six, and then they just sort of exploded towards the middle of that innings. Gaikwad the fastest to 1,000 runs in the IPL, joint fastest with Sachin Tendulkar at 31 innings.
He's a handy player, that fella.
Yeah, he was, but I also think it was really telling how they scored so freely against an attack that has been performing so well. What do you make of the bowling there from the Sunrisers?
Oh, I don't know that you can make too much of it. I mean, they from what I could see, I don't know that they did too much different than they've done before. It's just sometimes these batters come off, you know, that we're talking about some of the best T20 batters in the world. They come off. Umran Malik, you know, charging it at 150 clicks, and Gaikwad's just put him back over his head, 10 rows back into the stand. It's pretty impressive stuff. I think the credit goes to the batters there.
Just going back to the MS Dhoni situation, do you think that is the right option to go back to someone like Mahendra Singh Dhoni, or have we moved on and we're looking for another skipper? What do you reckon, Bingsy?
Look, I think there's a lot that can be made of this. And look, it's good good quick info fodder, isn't it? We have a read of it. We have a chat about it. The bottom line is, I think a lot of the captaincy, a lot of the plans are set in the team meetings, are set by the analysts. They know about their matchups. And, you know, the skipper's there as a little bit of a figurehead. I think it's, you know, it's fish and chip paper, really. You know, and that's what it will be in a couple of days' time. The one thing I would point out around the bowling, a really strange bowling card. I mean, Bhuvi Kumar up top went for, I think, 5 and over or something like that with his with his 4 overs, and then everyone else got a bit of humpty. But the thing I'd say, and I was kind of watching the footage, and it just clicked with me. They did the ground dimensions, and all of these grounds are pretty small when you consider the size of the bats and the quality of some of these batters. Now you've got some sort of 55-60 meter boundaries, so you're occasionally going to have a really big day out, which, you know, Gaikwad and Conway had on this occasion. So yeah, I wouldn't read too much into it from a bowling perspective. Baldy, we're going to move on. You took your phone into the repair shop today because you thought it was broken, because you're one of only 7 Australians between the ages of 25 and 41 not to have got a call up, I think is the statistic.
Yeah, very, very disappointed to not receive a call from the Australian Selection Committee today. I've clearly got an issue with my phone, and I'll be taking my phone to my mobile provider and demanding a refund on this month's plan. Yeah, look, deeply disappointed to miss out on selection, actually. I thought I was a chance. There's four teams been selected. I think it's a T20 squad, a 50-over squad, a test squad, and an Australia A squad to tour Sri Lanka in July, and I'm not in any of them. So I'm very, very, very disappointed. I thought they've taken about six or seven spinners to Sri Lanka, actually, combined in all the squads, and I was very disappointed that I'm now at least the seventh picked or the seventh ranked leg spinner in Australian cricket selectors' minds after Zampa, Swepson, Tanvir, Sanger.
I was excited to see Sanger in there.
Yeah. I think that's a good selection. I think he's got to take him and give him some experience.
And
so
you're big on the youth and the next kind of big thing. Sanger ticks a few of those boxes, and yeah, I really liked what I've seen from him so far.
I think it's just about giving those guys opportunities. And when I bang on about looking to the future, but what I'm trying to get at is, you want to give guys opportunities who you think have a future in the game and can grow into test cricket. It famously worked for England really, really well in 2001 after they got humped in the Ashes, and they went, right, okay, who's going to be our side to win in 05? We're going to start looking at those guys now. And I think that's the way forward for Australia, particularly with these A tours. New Zealand have done it very, very well for a long period of time. Whenever England have been successful, they've had a really strong Lions program. I think it's a wise move for Australia to start looking at the spin contingent, particularly in this group, to see what they are going to be able to do in Sri Lanka, because we've got a lot of big tours coming and we're going to need to be good in the spin department to win in those conditions.
So just looking at the Australia A squad, they're going to play a white ball and a red ball tour, same squad for both formats. Is there anyone you're particularly excited about in that Australia A squad?
Yeah, actually, Henry Hunt, the opener from South Australia, looks like he could be a likely character. He's been scoring a lot of runs in Sheffield Shield cricket. He's a young fella. Looks like he's going to be a big player for South Australia and have a big future. Raj, have you got someone that you had your eye on in that particular list?
I'm glad you asked, actually. I was thinking about, I really am excited about seeing Matthew Renshaw back in the game. He's been scoring some runs at county level, I believe.
Yep.
Not that there's a spot open at the top of the Australian order, but it's always good to see some pressure being put on.
Well, I think there potentially will be in a couple of years. If you think about what he's been doing for Queensland, he's been batting in the middle order for Queensland, somewhere around 4-5 in that Queensland order. We've got about 17 opening bats at the moment in that Queensland side, but he is effectively, I think, being groomed to have a look at what he can do as that kind of utility batter in the Usman Khawaja type mold. Can open the batting if he needs to, can bat anywhere between 3 and 6, and therefore is going to be in the selectors' minds. If you can only take one replacement batter on tour, is it going to be someone like Matt Renshaw who can bat anywhere in the order?
I think just going back to the point you made before about A squads, I think it's great that this is starting to happen again. I mean, obviously COVID is still disrupting the world, but you know, it was a big part of New Zealand. Some of those having tour sides come here and playing all our A sides, and you know, having that not there, I do think that hurt us a little bit this last summer. And you know, the ability to, like you say, to give these players that are your next level down that you do inevitably need in all formats of the game, the fact that that's restarting is encouraging, I guess, for the depth of international cricket.
Bawdy, question for you on the A squads: Peter Hanscom, Nick Maddison. I think they're almost stalwarts now, aren't they, in terms of their particularly their big bash sides. Have they been rewarded for some of that franchise success, or have they been, you know, doing the business in state cricket?
Nick Maddison definitely has. He's been doing the business big time in state cricket for a number of years now, and he, again, is another player that has been around for a long time and deserves to come back into the Australian setup. What I like about that Australia A squad is that there are a few experienced players in there that have played test cricket. So you've got Harris, Travis Head, you've got Peter Hanscom, Nick Maddison, Sean Abbott's been around for a long time, even though he hasn't played a lot for Australia, Jai Richardson and Matt Renshaw. And then you've got your kind of young players coming through that we want to see. We want to have a look at what Henry Hunt can do, what Josh Inglis can do, what Tanvir Sanger can do in those kind of spots around them as well. And then you've got kind of relative unknowns. I don't know a lot about Aaron Hardy. I don't know a lot about Todd Murphy, who's been picked in that squad. So I'm interested to see what those guys are going to be able to do. And I hope that they get at least some game time in that squad and they're not just there to kind of make up the numbers.
So this tour is a while away. It begins in June. They're playing all formats, 2020s, one days and tests. Just from a high level, Baldy, what are you looking for there? Is it complete domination from the Australians?
Well, if you have a look at our approach to the World Cup last year, we were terrible in Bangladesh in the build-up to the T20 World Cup, so I expect us to be terrible in Sri Lanka against Sri Lanka, low spinning wickets. Look, it's not brilliant preparation conditions-wise, but it is good in terms of putting this Australian T20 side together and putting them under pressure. So we're going to see what Finch can do. He's going to have a little bit of pressure on him as skipper because he needs to be able to justify his place in the side. Warner is going to go on that tour. I'm not sure how much he's going to play. Smith's going to go on that tour. Marsh, Stark, Maxwell, they're all named in the squad. So the thing that I do like about it is that we're starting to build the squad together better than we did last year. I'm expecting Australia to dominate Sri Lanka in terms of the series result, if I'm being honest. And I would expect us, I'm not sure if we're playing three or five T20s. But regardless, we should win the majority of them. It should be 2-1, 3-2 at a minimum from a T20 point of view. The ODI squad, we can experiment with a little bit. I'm not so much concerned about what happens in that arena. We've still got 12 months to go or a little bit more between now and the ODI World Cup in 2023.
Look, that's, you know, enough Australia and enough kind of patter to kind of get us to the thing that I think everyone is kind of on this podcast has been building up to kind of talk about with these appointments happening in English cricket and, you know, to really sort of unpack them. There's a few different things. Obviously, the county season has started now. A few Kiwis over there, which is great. Will Young's been getting a few runs and De Gronholm's over there now as well. But look, Binksy, I think we've got to start with you and get your take on this English setup. We've got Rob Key now. We've got Ben Stokes. A couple of appointments. It seems like maybe there's a few more that are coming in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, where are you? I mean, I guess those two appointments, does that lift your spirits in terms of English cricket fan, or are you still pretty down in the dumps?
Look, it's difficult to be buoyed particularly by a couple of appointments at this stage. We've got a long time until that first test match rolls around against you boys, actually, at Lords. Look, I still think there's a lot to go on. In an ideal world, I think your managing director would have been able to appoint a coach who would have been able to have some say in which captain he wants to work with. They've not been able to do that, given that the situation they've found themselves in with Joe Root standing down, which I think was the right thing for him and for the team as well. I think it's a long, long time to be a captain of an English team or an Australian team or an Indian team. 5 or 6 years in the role takes its toll on you. I think we touched upon this the other week in our Hall of Fame. Just shows Kane Williamson's longevity and resilience in the captaincy role for the Black Caps. There's still some problems in the boardroom. Rumours are pointing to the fact that Tom Harrison is only really sticking around because there's a lack of any executives at the moment at the ECB. Ian Watmore, who was the chairman, stood down due to ill health. The guy that stood in for him has now stood down due to ill health, Barry O'Brien. His stand-in is now standing in. The guy who is on the committee that's been put in place to appoint the new chairman has resigned from the committee because he's thrown his hat into the ring for the chairman's role. Wasim Khan would have been brilliant, but he's now general manager of cricket at the ICC. And look, we've still got some question marks around coaches. Justin Langer apparently out of the running, Ricky Ponting out of the running. So it looks like we're talking about probably a Gary Kirsten, Graham Ford, who I think would be really good appointments. But yeah, a lot of water to go under the bridges until we get to the first game of the season.
So just picking up on the board issues there, Tom Harrison, he's been in charge for 7 years. Would you characterise his time there as a success? I mean, he's won a one-day competition as a white ball side. England have been right up there on top of the world in both of those formats. They've struggled with Red Bull. There's a few issues around discrimination coming out now. How have you seen his tenure overall?
Look, I'm not going to say it's too early to judge it because it's not, because as you mentioned, he's been in the role for a long time. I think his two biggest successes are from a commercial perspective. He got a lot of cash in with the TV deal going back several years. And I think the reality is that put England in a place where we were able to weather a pretty big COVID storm and still have some money in the bank, despite needing to make a number of redundancies and cuts at a board level for the ECB. And I think the jury's still out, and this is going to be a controversial comment, and I really hope George De Bell's not listening, but I think the 100 will also go down in his legacy as a success. I think creating that franchise tournament actually is really, really going to help. And clearly the 2019 World Cup win, they put their eggs in that basket, and let's be honest, they made a pretty good omelette out of it. And the problem is now that that is to the detriment of the Red Bull game, and they're going to need to do a little bit of an about face. Really interesting for me, that probably the biggest comment that's come out of Rob Key's appointment outside of the Broad Anderson thing, which I think we all knew was going to happen, is he has said that Test cricket will be prioritised pretty much all the way through this season, and Owen Morgan can only expect to get his best one-day side after the Red Bull cricket's finished. I think that's a really, really big statement of intent. But look, I think it'll be a mixed reign for Tom Harrison. There's another scandal, if you want to call it that, that's broken over the course of the last couple of days, which is that he's actually interfered in county running of an inquiry into racism with regard to Essex. So, there's still a lot more to play on what his legacy looks like. And it's strange that he's only really now becoming super visible when he's been pretty anonymous in the background for the past 7 years or so.
I think the interesting thing that we'll look back on in 2 or 3 years is whether or not the change that he was able to instigate in bringing in the 100, or his role in the 100 sort of becoming part of the scene of English cricket, whether that is a catalyst for change in terms of the way that the county scene is managed and how county cricket as a Red Bull competition sees itself moving forward, and whether or not there's an opportunity to use that to reform county cricket and improve it as much as it can be done in order to kind of rejuvenate that Red Bull national side, men's national side. I think that will be a measure of whether or not he was able to start instigating that change, and I guess a measure of how his successor is able to build on that and bring that forward. Because for English cricket to be successful, I think a lot of people standing back from English cricket would agree that something, and I think there are juries out on potentially what it needs to be, but something needs to change in the way that county cricket is set up, because I'm not sure that it's producing, as a pathway, elite test cricketers from a batting point of view. And we've seen that over the last 10 or so years. So whether or not there needs to be structural change, whether or not it's a conditions thing or number of teams, franchises, whatever, there is a question mark as to whether or not there needs to be change in the county game, and whether or not the 100 is going to be a catalyst for that. They're all questions that I think are going to come out over the next couple of years.
He has been, Robert Key has been quoted as saying that he needs that county game is where the test cricket comes from, even though county cricket doesn't necessarily bring the cash in. That's where the that's where the revenue stream comes from, test cricket. Before we get to Ben Stokes, who I think we should talk about as a new skipper, I just want to talk to you about three people and get your thoughts on their selection. So I'll give you three names: James Anderson, Stuart Broad, and Alex Hales. What does the outlook look like for them under this new regime?
The first two, I think, are pretty easy. Rob Key and Ben Stokes have both intimated that James Anderson and Stuart Broad will feature when the Red Bull season starts. Broad's had a pretty decent start, played his first game for Nottinghamshire this week, and I think took four for and a useful little cameo down the order where he kind of
45 off 27, I think, yeah. Banged a couple of big sixes into the grandstand.
Gave it a bit of humpty. And then James Anderson, I think from an economy perspective, was never going to be in question. Bowled pretty dry in his first outing for Lancashire, but then picked up, I think, four wickets in his second innings that he played in terms of nicking off the opener as well. So, yeah, look, I think normal service resumed there.
I mean, it's as simple as that. Like, Rob Key's quoted as saying, one of the first things Ben Stokes said was Jimmy and Brody are coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, on that, have we got to the bottom of why they weren't there? Because I don't understand.
I have to wait for one of their books, I think.
Well, do we know who didn't want them there? Because,
well, there's some theories flying around this table, isn't there, that we've had. Raj has got a theory. I've got a theory. I don't know whether you two boys, Bordy, will definitely have a theory. So I don't know, Raj, if you want to share your theory first. I'm happy to share mine. I just don't want to hug the microphone.
Well, I do want to know about Alex Hales as well, because I think I'll that's very, Hales, very exciting. But my theory is that it's not really a theory. It just seems like common sense to me. And I feel like James Anderson and Stuart Broad not being there, they've got nothing to prove to anybody from fitness or performance level over the last 12 months. That squarely sits with the captain. I don't know any captain in world cricket, even at club cricket, who doesn't go out there with the team that he wants, that is available. And if I know Baldy's putting his hand up, but like at international level, captains have a big say-so in who is on their team. And I don't think he would have had to campaign much to get the, 1,100 test wickets into the team.
Well, and if that's the deal, though, and it's like, is this going to be weird? Is it going to be weird when they come back to the dressing room? I don't know. I mean, maybe we're going too deep in the weeds here, but I think it's I'm really fascinated by this England situation in general, because I think that there's a number of different elements and also the elements that Baldy mentioned about kind of stripping everything back. You know, it sort of feels like now England is, I mean, it's very much an American sports term, but they're sort of in rebuild mode. And it's now this, you know, they've got a new captain. They've got they're going to trial, it looks like, different coaches for red and white ball, which is something we don't see that often. They've got all this franchise tournament that is still very new. I don't know. It feels like a fascinating experiment in terms of what's going to happen there.
Well, what's your theory, Big C? And please let me know about Alex Hales. I really want to know.
Yeah, so I'll cover Alex Hales first, because I think that's a relatively easy one. He's available for selection, in my view, and in the view, I think, of Rob Key as well. I think he's been pretty clear to say that the slate is clean. He's also mentioned, and the reason I say this about Hales is he's made this specific comment around Joe Clark. So Joe Clark was an up-and-coming batsman, touted as, you know, potential future England player for a long, long time as he was growing up in his early Worcestershire career. He was involved in the Alex Hepburn case, which, you know, has been well documented if you want to go and kind of have a read about that. But Key has said everybody deserves a second chance, and was asked about that with Hales as well. I don't necessarily think Hales gets back in, because I think over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen the emergence of Joss Butler at the top of the order, which, let's face it, that's where Alex Hales bats. And then we've also seen an emergence of pretty good young players. I want to give a shout out to Harry Brook from Yorkshire, almost top of the run tallies in the first class stuff, high score 194, averaging just a meagre 170 for the season so far. He came into the one-day side in the Caribbean and performed really, really well. You've got the likes of Phil Salt, who will, you know, potentially play that role, as well, of course, as, you know, Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow. So it's not a shoo-in.
Sam Billings. Liam Livingston.
Just a reminder to Raj, edit that bit out. I don't necessarily think that Hales comes back. Your second question, or first question, was around Broad and Anderson. I'll just ask you a question. Who's been in a meeting where someone said, no idea's a stupid idea, guys, just come out with it? Someone has said, like, oh, let's leave Broadie and Jimmy out for a laugh. And it's just happened. I don't think it would be root, to be honest. And the reason I say that is I've seen a lot of the comments, you know, about Root's contribution to English cricket, and it included sort of plaudits from Anderson and Broad. So unless he's that good a bloke that they kind of go, do you know what, he's made that decision for the right reason, we don't have a beef with it, I think that has come from a little bit further up ECB towers. I don't know where, because there's no bugger there, but it must have been a Strauss or a Harrison decision, perhaps with the backing of some of the management who went, yeah, we can do this and do that, and take, you know, Ollie Robinson, even though he's not fit to lead the attack. I don't think it's come from Joe Root.
Conspiracy Corner, we do love a deep dive down there, but let's get sort of back to a couple of these topics. Raj mentioned Stokes before. You know, what I think really he was the only person, and when I look at that side, who they could have actually picked. But How is he going to be as a leader, do you think? I mean, he certainly frames himself as someone who just gives absolutely everything to the cause whenever he plays. And that's actually my biggest worry as an English, you know, as if I was an English fan, that managing his workload, I think, is going to be the biggest challenge for him, because you've seen him be able to just do the donkey work over and over again. And I don't think that's the best use for him, but it seems very hard to get the ball from his hands, and he's going to have to get it from his own hands at the moment. So yeah, what do you make of how Stokes is going to be as a leader?
I'm hoping that he can identify the fact that his value to the England cricket team is as a partnership breaker, as the guy who comes in and does a little bit of the Andrew Flintoff kind of mold. I've got to really stamp my authority on the game here, and I've got to break this partnership, and I'm the guy to do that, as opposed to somebody needs to bowl 9 overs of bouncers at this batter at the other end, and I'm going to put my hand up to do it because I'm the best guy for the job. The fortune that he's going to have if he gets Anderson and Broad back is that he'll have 2 of England's 4 or 5 best fast bowlers ever to be able to come and do some of that job for him. And then the other guys that he can put around that are guys like Mark Wood and Jofra Archer and Ollie Stone, pending fitness, who are all impact kind of bowlers. So he's going to have, I think, more tools at his disposal going forward if that's the balance of their fast bowling attack. And then Jack Leach or a similar spinner is going to be able to do some of the holding role that he has been asked to do with the ball a little bit. So I'm hoping that from a bowling point of view, he's going to have less workload but more impact. The question's going to be, as the scrutiny becomes more and more intense, particularly from the red top papers, is he going to be able to have the mental strength that he's had to rebuild? Because remember, he's taken some time out of cricket over the last 12 to 18 months to refresh himself mentally. Is the work that he's done during that period going to stand him in good stead to be able to deal with all of that external media scrutiny? And I really, really hope that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, look, I think the external media scrutiny piece, you know, he's had some off the field issues, and that's why I think he's been mentioned in the same breath as Botham and Flintoff. The one difference for me is he's a very different cricketer to those two. So I'll probably just slightly disagree with your point around Flintoff and the partnership breaker. When he was captain, he was the guy that actually bowled the hard overs. I remember him bowling 51 overs in an innings against Sri Lanka in England, and that pretty much rooted his knee for the rest of his career.
Yeah, that's what we don't want. Yeah. We don't want him to be doing that.
But that's what Flintoff did as captain. I think the other thing is Botham and Flintoff, they weren't, you know, they dragged you by the scruff of the neck with them on the field, but they weren't the first guy at nets and the last guy to leave. Stokes, by all accounts, is the hardest trainer, sets the best example. So I think he, you know, he's a different kind of leader. Mm. I think the other thing I'd just say, he led the side in pretty strange circumstances this last English summer when there was COVID in the England One Day International camp. They basically had to name a third 11 because the first two 11s were in the first squad, and they put together a team of, you know, a couple of journeymen in there, and he actually architected a victory against Pakistan in that one day series as a leader. And he's also led in tests as well during that COVID bubble, I think against the West Indies, where Joe Root had a break from a parental leave perspective. So I do think that he's got that ability. I think he's off the field misdemeanors in terms of nightclubs and all that kind of stuff, I think they're well behind him. And I think he'll have the right support network behind him. And the added bonus for me as well, and this is no disrespect to New Zealand and South Africa who will go and play in England this summer, he won't need those workloads as much as he would overseas. You know, it is going to seem around a bit. There is a Duke's cricket ball. So he probably won't need to do quite as much during this English summer as he would if we were going on a tour to India, for example, and he's got to play as one of 3 seamers and probably bowl himself into the ground.
And okay, let's move on now to the coaching setup. We don't have coaches yet. You sort of touched on how there might be coaching appointments soon and who they might be. But I'm quite interested in the actual general concept, because it's something that we hear a lot about, isn't it? That, you know, there should be different coaches for white ball and red ball. But actually, correct me if I'm wrong. Has it happened very recently? I can't remember too many sides.
Andy Flower and Ashley Giles for England. So yeah, split coaches between red ball and white ball. What, 5-6 years ago?
Okay, yeah, that's, you know, skip my memory, obviously. But you know, it's, I think a lot of teams kind of talk about it. I certainly know that New Zealand have, that it's sort of in the air all the time saying, oh, well, you know, it's a very challenging situation. We've talked about it many times during the COVID bubble sort of stuff, how players are away for so long. Like, do we think that this could now be, you know, the way of the future? And it has to be the way of the future in terms of white ball sides and red ball sides having different coaches all around the world, not just in England. And then I'm really interested again to see how it works. You touched on again before how Rob Key has come out and said that the red ball will be prioritised. How does that make you feel if you're Owen Morgan, or if you're the coach of that white ball setup, potentially coming into your role and being judged on the performance of that white ball side, and you're not getting the players you want? I think there's so many different elements to how that all works.
Yeah, there are a lot of elements, but I like it. I like having that split red and white ball, with the caveat that you actually still need somebody overseeing at that top level, not necessarily on the ground floor. I am looking forward to that happening. I think it's the next step forward in the evolution of cricket. The one thing I just want to pick up on, something Rob Key said, was that they are moving away from maintaining that rest and rotation policy a little bit. Pick the best team at that. Pick the best 11 available to you at that time. I think that's also something really good to see going forward.
I think what we might see moving forward is a head coach who happens to also be the test coach, and a white ball coach that reports into them, or something along those lines. I mean, Australia have used, we'll send our assistant coach to coach the white ball team when the red ball team and white ball team are playing in the same place or different places at the same time. So that's kind of an extension of that. We'll send our assistant coach to coach the white ball side, or we'll bring a white ball coach in as an assistant coach and kind of give him the white ball team as a little bit of extra responsibility. I think formalising the relationship between the red ball and white ball coaches is very, very important, so that you have situations where you want to prioritise white ball cricket for 12 months in the lead up to a big World Cup, particularly if it's at home, then you're able to do that within your structure. The last thing you want is a red ball coach and a white ball coach at loggerheads with each other, because they want access to the same players at the same time, and one gets the Guernsey and the other one doesn't, and that puts, you know, the other coach offside or what have you.
Yeah, look, I think England are probably going to approach it in a slightly different way, in that they're going to say Rob Key is managing director of England men's cricket. He sets the priorities, and then I think they will have two coaches. I don't think they'll go to a head coach and then that sort of, you know, reporting line, because that's always going to be, well, he's the red ball coach, really, not the white ball coach. I think the other thing that you'll potentially see in that vein as well is we're going to see that sort of impact of, you know, white ball specialists. We see it in franchise cricket. I think you'll maybe see those guys swap a little bit more to give that kind of different voice. I think the other factor, and the biggest reason I think England are going to go down this route, is they've said, and you guys have had it as well, you've played a bloody test match whilst you're still in the middle of a one-day series, haven't you, recently?
Yep.
You know, almost just the way that you're playing cricket now, you're starting a series, and when have you got time to plan for the next series if you're kind of day three of the test match and you've got to disappear off to take a Zoom call because you've got to select a one-day side that arrives in the country in a couple of weeks' time and, you know, starts the day after the other guys have left? You kind of almost need that planning time as a coach. So to kind of segment it, I think, makes a hell of a lot of sense. The only thing I'd say, though, is money-wise, easy for England to do that and pay two guys or three guys, Australia to do that, India to do that. But not every nation is going to have that ability, because you are going to pay a premium to get someone on a you know, half-time basis, aren't you?
I think that planning piece is a really good point, because the fact that you've got, like you say, there's international tournaments that you're targeting now pretty much every year. Certainly in the white ball stuff that we've talked about in the past, how there's T20 tournament World Cups, there's one day World Cups, and then we've got the World Test Championship going on and stuff. So yeah, I think it's a really crucial point.
Lippy, you want to chip in, I think, with some news from elsewhere in the cricketing world?
Yeah, I guess I've just sort of touched on before how fascinating situation I see in England. There's actually another tournament just about to start called the Fairbreak Invitational that I'm really, really interested to see how it all goes. For anyone who's not heard of the tournament so far, it's a women's T20 league that's just about to kick off. Starts on the 4th of May, goes through to the 15th. It's 19 games. And it features some of the world's best players, the likes of Susie Bates, who's captaining the Falcons. We've got Sophie Devine and Katie Martin from New Zealand as well, plus Sophie Eccleston, Laura Wolfart, DeAndre Dotton, littered with all the stars that we just saw over here at the World Cup. But then there's also players that are going to be making up the rest of those sides from 25 different associate nations, including the likes of Rwanda, Bhutan. It really is a global tournament. And I suppose when we're thinking about the global game and building the game, tournaments like this, I mean, I would imagine it's going to be an amazing experience for the women from those nations to be mixing and mingling and learning from all of these, the best players in the world. But I'm fascinated to see how it plays out on the field because, you know, I just think like the level of skill is going to be so stark in some of those different areas. So I hope it's a massive success. I hope it's a real celebration of cricket and that players can, you know, that basically it just uplifts everyone in the spirit of cricket. But yeah, you know, I think there's potential there for it to be something that happens on all sorts of different levels. I know, you know, in the men's game, we talk about how can we actually grow the game? And then we've talked about T20 World Cups and having lots of different teams. This is an opportunity to see, does something like this actually work and really raise the standard of cricket? So as far as I know, it's going to be screened on Sky in here in New Zealand and all around the world. They're making sure that it's available for lots of different people to see. So yeah, I'd suggest you check it out over the next couple of weeks.
Well, that just about brings an end to this episode of the Top Order Podcast. You can find us, of course, on all of our social feeds if you want to dip in and give us some comments, feedback, or request any news, views and interviews around the cricketing world, please do drop into www.thetoporderpodcast.com. But for now, it's good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.